Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, we're going to talk about when a retirement plan sponsor, well, actually when an employer decides to set up a retirement plan and some of the things that they really have to think about. Because again, you go in with the best of intentions in life and some things don't work out. And that's a result of a lot of the choices plan sponsors make. And, you know, this whole episode is to try to avoid some of those issues. And of course, first things first, go to that 401ksite.com for further information on all our live events. Arlington, Texas, about 3 weeks away. That's crazy. Got about 12, 15 people signing up. Work with a lot of good providers in Dallas area trying to get people to go. And, you know, you know, some people say, oh, yeah, I'll make it, and they never make it and all that stuff. And so just trying to arrange for people to go. And, of course, it's a great event. Our special guest is Dave Valley. May the 3rd, we will be at Yankee Stadium. I'm sorry, that Arlington is May the 3rd. On June the 7th, we will be at Yankee Stadium. 1996 World Series hero Jim Leyritz will be our special guest. Dave Valley is the guest in Arlington. He is apparently the Rangers TV voice or TV analyst, and I understand that he may be working some games for the Yankees on the YES channel. So we'll see about that. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe you guys know I'm at 26 ballparks. There are 30 left. There are 30 altogether. I'm at 26. I got 4 left. Going to Arlington, see a game there, and then drive to Houston because my family, the rest of my family, hasn't been there. I've been there in Houston. We had an event there in 2021, I want to say. So let's go to the topic at hand. Buying a new car can really be a traumatic experience. Probably one of those reasons. I don't have fun buying a car. I just don't. It's just a harrowing experience. I have bought cars from last cars, the Mazda and the Prius are salespeople that I did with, dealt with in the past. We lost 2 cars in the Hurricane Sandy. I haven't bought a car since 2012. So many makes and models to choose from, and there are a lot of different factors and different packages and all that. I mean, I remember back in the day where, you know, having a GPS was a big deal. You know, now it makes no sense. Now with the iPhone, I have a GPS in my car. I don't think I've used it in the last 3 or 4 years. It's not updated. You travel on the New Gothels Bridge in between New York and New Jersey, and it doesn't recognize New Gothels Bridge. And I think the update for the GPS would have been like $500. I'm like, no thanks. I could buy an iPhone, and the iPhone will actually tell me the traffic, which is a lot better. Besides, you know, obviously, there's so many different factors and, you know, money, purpose, proficiency, all that kind of stuff. And I think I've said in a lot of podcasts, I used to lease cars, and now with my wife, we certainly buy them. We run them into the ground, as they say. It's kind of nice not having I haven't had a payment on the car in about 8 years. So that certainly helped out a lot. But, to me, buying cars like putting in a retirement plan. I don't think plan sponsors really see that way. But they put it in place without understanding the consequences and costs and liability concerns and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the plan has to be the right fit because it doesn't fit correctly. The plan sponsor may either leave money on the table or risk the liability that goes with it. So this is all about, you know, a blueprint on how a plan sponsor, a new plan sponsor acts. Determines what plan and what providers are the right fit. Obviously, it's important to understand how many employees you have as a plan sponsor. It's a rather simple question. Who's eligible? Obviously, if, you know, you have a lot more employees, it becomes a lot more interesting. And, you know, there are all plans available to all employees, but some plans may be cost prohibitive. And, you know, I always talk about the attorney, solo practitioner, age 75. We put away a whole host of money because there's no retirement age of 65. And He was able to save a lot of money that he couldn't save if he had employees. So that's really, you know, where it boils down to, how many employees you have. If you have no employees, then obviously a solo 401k is a great deal. A SEP IRA could be a great deal as well if you could put away the maximum. But once you have employees, the SEP doesn't make any sense, because if you're putting away 25% for yourself, you're going to have to put away 25% for the employees. So, you know, that's SEP is a great idea if you don't want to pay for any upkeep and administration. You don't need 5,500s, but when you got to give the same contribution to everybody else that you give yourself, that's a problem. In a 401k plan, if you got new comparability, safe harbor plan design, you know, you can give your employees 5% and give your, you know, self 25%. So obviously, number of employees will dictate what type of plan you're going to have and what makes sense. You know, again, you have a lot of employees, DB plan no longer makes sense. Next is, what's the purpose of setting up a retirement plan? You think it's a simple question, but, you know, there can be more than one answer. Is it for the save, you know, was the goal to save for all the employees, or is the main goal to save for the retirement plan of the owners, save for the retirement of the owners and the highly compensated employees? You know, because that will decide what kind of plan design you have if you went the 401k route. Again, safe harbor, new comparability works well if you have the money and you want to save more and give more contributions to the highly compensated employees and the owners of the plan, of the employer, I'm sorry. Next, what is the age and compensation of the owners and highly compensated employees? You know, obviously saving the maximum benefit is a goal. One way to, you know, if you could afford it, you could set up a cash balance plan. You know, DB plan could be used. You could use cross-tested profit sharing. You know, again, it's all about what you can afford to do. When you have a pizza place like the one my daughter worked at, they probably don't have money to contribute to their employees, and so they're not going to offer a retirement plan, which they didn't. And that begs the question, how much can you afford in employer contributions? There are plan sponsors out there who could afford nothing. And it's a problem when their ADP deferral rate for the NHCs requires refunds to highly compensated employees, and they can't afford a QNIC. That's really, you know, that's an issue. It really hurts you. It really handcuffs you if you really can't afford anything and you have some testing issues. Next is, who will pay plan expenses? You know, the employer could pay it out of their pocket, or they could use the plan to pay it. Obviously, if they pay it out of pocket, don't have the plan pay for it, it's an ordinary business deduction. Obviously, if you have the plan pay for it, you have liability issues. You got to make sure the plan costs are reasonable for the service provided. You pay out of pocket, participants don't pay for it. It certainly helps. Next, ask the employees. Small business, you know, obviously is not a democracy, but it may be wise to ask employees for their input in setting up a retirement plan. They should consider sending a questionnaire to employees to gauge your interest in a retirement plan. The questionnaire should be tailored towards trying to identify whether they see this plan as an important employee benefit. And question whether, if you set up a 401k plan, if they're going to defer or not. You know, you're not going to give the employees a say in designing the plan. They're not going to be the ones footing the bill for the employer contributions, but having their input is a great idea. I know that's a foreign concept to the employers that I used to work for, but I think it's a good idea. Next, find a financial advisor. Financial advisor should be hired as long as you have one non-owner employee. No ifs, ands, or buts. You know, again, I handle my own investment decisions. That's on me. The moment I would have an employee, you bet I'm going to have a financial advisor, even if I think that the best funds are Vanguard index funds or, you know, Fidelity or whatever it is. I still have to hire a financial advisor to give participant education and all that kind of stuff, and investment policy statement and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, there are a lot of TPAs out there, and certainly know the payroll providers do it, where they're willing to work with plans that have no advisors in the plan. Just remember, those payroll provider TPAs are not legally culpable if something goes wrong. I was sitting in a meeting many years ago with a plan that didn't have an advisor, and you know, this was a $10 million 401k plan. I begged them to get an advisor, but they didn't. Had a meeting with the folks at ADP or Paychex. I don't remember which one, but they brought in a financial advisory guy, and he basically said, you know, you guys need a small cap fund, but I'm not giving you financial advice. I'm not a fiduciary to the plan, blah, 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 blah. Next, to have a retirement plan, a good retirement plan, you have to have a good a team. I'm all a big fan of the team effort. You need to find a solid TPA and a good ERISA attorney. You know, there are TPAs that have very good ERISA attorneys. I used to be one, at least I thought I was. And, you know, the issue over there is, you know, as a TPA attorney, there was no attorney-client relationship. I was working for the TPA. I was doing the best I could to keep our administrators out of trouble for making mistakes in plan administration. So I didn't have any duty of care with the clients. Now, of course, being in my own practice since 2010, I certainly do. My relationships with the TPA, and that ruffles feathers. I would say 2 years ago, I got a referred issue by a TPA. There was an issue dealing with a participant who lied and got an IRA. There was an issue dealing with an audit and dealing with an IRA. He got an IRA distribution, which he was not entitled to because there was no break in service. And the TPA had screwed up, recommended me. And, you know, the TPA all of a sudden is like hitting the plan sponsor for fees on this. And I didn't think it was fair. And I said so. And that certainly buried a relationship with the TPA. You know, a guy I used to go to college with, and he's still mad at me. But that's life. I represent the client, even if they referred to me. And, you know, the client has to be treated well. And there was no reason that there should have been a bill for this work. And I said so. And again, like I said, they're not happy with me. And there are no more referrals. That's life. But, you know, if you have a good dream team of TPAs and ERISA attorneys, you could go a long way in maximizing tax deductions, facilitating plan administration, and, you know, maintaining the qualification of the plan as well as limiting liability. It's also important to get the proper insurance for the plan and the plan's fiduciary. Obviously, an ERISA bond's required. Nothing you can do about it. You got to live with it. It is what it is. It can go, you know, it can go very, very badly if you don't have an ERISA bond and you have a question on your 5500. It goes a lot worse if you did have a fiduciary steal plan assets. I had that. It's not fun. There's no avenue to recover money. Luckily, this was a big bankruptcy, and a lot of the money was returned and whatnot from this advisor who stole money. It's a headache that didn't need to be if they were properly insured as legally required. Fiduciary liability insurance, on the other hand, we know isn't legally required. But obviously, if you have a plan participant, protecting yourself from liability is a good idea in my book. That's how I see it. And it's important to get the right bond. A lot of times you deal with insurance people and they're trying to sell you a crime policy, and it's not an ERISA bond. So I think plan sponsors need to be aware of that. Last but not least, once you said it, you don't forget it. You know, after implementing your retirement plan, you know, a lot of employers just, you know, forget about the plan. They forget their duties. They try to beg off the advisor from setting up participant education meetings. Hiring plan providers is just not enough. You have to let them do their job. They need to review, you know, as plan sponsor, you need to review plan providers to make sure they're doing the job as contracted. You have it from time to time where the TPA is not doing their job or the financial advisor is not doing their job. You don't see it as much lately, But, you know, you'd have advisors who would just collect a quarterly fee and just absolutely do nothing on the plan. And that was always a problem and always an issue. So it's important that plan providers review their – plan providers get reviewed by the plan sponsors. Fee disclosure regulations, you know how much you're getting paid, how much you're being charged for the plan. You can't take those fee disclosures, put it in the back of the drawer. You need to benchmark your fees. You could pay $95, get the 401k averages book, and be happy with that, that you did your job and review and benchmark. And it's important that plan sponsors get the fee disclosures. If you don't, it's, plan Department of Labor could consider that, relationship as a prohibited transaction. And we certainly don't want that. And, you have a prohibited transaction, you also have an excise tax involved, and the excise tax is going to be probably on the amount of the contract, and you don't certainly need that. And, there are certainly resources out there this day and age, especially with the internet. Back 20-some-odd years ago, you had no resources. It wasn't all out there. Plan sponsors really need to be aware of their role as a plan sponsor, the liability. TPA screws up, plan sponsor has to fix it, pay for it. You have corrective contributions need to be made because the TPA or the new TPA discovered that there was an ADP failure a few years back. That's a problem. And, setting up a retirement plan is not easy. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of pitfalls. And that's why a lot of people are joining PEPs. Yeah, they're not as popular as, some people want them to be, including yours truly. But, those type of issues are some of the reasons that plan sponsors say, I don't really want this and it's too much and I'll join a PEP. But, too often plan sponsors don't realize what a PEP is all about and they still want to have that control. So I think it's really important for plan sponsors to identify their issues and really understand with the issues with starting up a plan and that you just can't start it and just, let it go. It's, it's not like buying, a piece of equipment from the gym equipment. There's this one piece of equipment in our bedroom, and right now it's a great way to, hang my Ranger hoodies. You can't have a plan that works like that. It's got to be functional. It's got to be operational. And it's got to be reviewed because too often plan sponsors land in a world of hurt for nonsense. I have a couple of plans right now dealing with some issues where there's a risk of disqualification. So it's important that you understand these issues. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of that 401k podcast. We've got a short episode, I guess, this week. Go to that401ksite.com for further information on all our live events. Arlington, Texas, the Bronx, New York, May the 3rd, June the 7th. $100 to show up, be a part of it. If you have multiple people from the same firm, I just had that in Arlington, had a firm sign up, 6 people. Please feel free, email me, you get in for a lot cheaper. And go in for $50 ahead instead of 100. But, we're trying to draw attendance. You got these people sponsoring your events. You want to make sure you get the biggest crowd as imaginable. It's a lot of fun. People who listen to this will agree. So I hope everybody enjoyed this episode of that 401k podcast. Tune in next week for another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. Thank you.